than a hip-hop classic Patreon album review that you decided on. Not us. Not me. Not Ken, not BZ, not Mike. You decided. So become a Patreon today and decide what we review in terms of the classic albums for you. You guys selected Ghostface Killah, Supreme Clientele. A lot of damn
tracks. What it beat up? What it beat up?
What it beat up?
Scarface with 11%, The Diary. Notorious B.I.G., Life at the Death.
22%. I can't believe it beat that.
That is crazy.
I'm not surprised.
I am.
Yeah, beating Biggie.
The second one?
Yeah, it's Biggie!
Public Enemy, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, 10%.
That would have been fun.
Mm-hmm. Smith & Wesson, The Shining,
1%.
Oh, shit! 1%.
So that means you're 1% out of 854
people. Hey, we love you.
You're OG, for real. You real about this.
Tupac, Me Against the World, 17%.
I thought we did that, though. No, we didn't do
all
that.
All Eyes on Me with All Death.
Yeah.
All Eyes on Me.
That was okay. Okay.
And the last one, De La Soul, Bulum Mind State with 3%.
I'm not gonna lie. Like I listened to this way after. Mm-hmm. So my first introduction to Ghostface solo albums was Fish Scale. Love that fucking album. Love this album too.
That was my real introduction too. Honestly.
Fish Scale?
Honestly speaking. I saw these albums on the shelves, but I was listening to other stuff.
Me too.
Yeah.
It has to be a Florida thing.
What year was this? 2000?
2000. Yeah.
2000, so I was here. What did I pick up? I was, I'm afraid to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. No, it wasn't Mr. Servon.
That was the... It was,
it was the
late
last,
90s. Late 90s.
It was the last, I was still trying to hold on to the last.
Ghetto Postage?
Not Ghetto Postage. I had bought, you know what? I was finally off of it. I had bought Only God Can Judge Me, and I was like, oh, it's over.
Yeah.
It's over.
Thank God I was working at the record store, so I got a chance to hear it.
Listen to it first. To it.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I bought it.
All those free albums.
You knew it was over.
It was over. I was like,
I feel you.
Right. I was like the only person in the hood still holding on to Master P, man, like for the longest. But yeah.
Yeah. So I gave up after the last dime.
Last done, yeah.
I should have gave up there.
Yeah. That's what I should have gave up too. That's what I should have gave up.
But yeah, so that, you know, this was not my first introduction. Like, I got to this way later after I met you guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just talking
hip-hop. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you were still young, though. Yeah, you were still, what, 19, 20?
I was 21 when I met y'all. 21, 22.
Jeez, that's crazy.
I know, man.
Shit.
Fucking 34 now.
That is fucking crazy. Shit,
bro. When I first got into this, this just kind of reinforced the reason why I like Ghostface and why Ghostface is my favorite Wu-Tang member, man. Like, I don't know, man. It's just, it's hard to copy Ghost's smoothness on shit, man. Mm-hmm. Like, and to think that, you know, he came up obviously with Wu-Tang and RZA, it can be choppy. He's not always choppy, but he can be choppy. And you have some of those grittier type, like all of this wasn't clean, even though a lot of it was. But I don't know, man. It's just, Ghost is so smooth, dog. Like this nigga, he don't think about nothing. Mm-hmm. He might just have an idea. Yeah, man, just put me in the booth with the fucking big ass gold ego on the arm and shit, the robes, all the chains, and he just fucking raps, dog. Like, I don't know, man. It's real hard outside of what I just said to explain why I love Ghost so much.
And his cadence too.
Yes. Yeah. Like his flow, his voice.
He has charisma, man. I think the funny thing is, like, when they first came out, right, to the mainstream world, Method Man was the one that kind of propelled to the forefront, you know, and, you know, he was the star. But over time, Ghost actually supplanted him. Like, you know, Method went on to do TVs, movies and shit like that, but Ghost really became, like, that dude out of Wu-Tang Clan.
This album really, it pushed him forward.
It really started pushing him forward. Do that much, did it?
Right.
No, because it was still, I guess people would consider like the first era of Wu-Tang. Like this was after, but it was before Wu-Tang Forever, because Wu-Tang Forever after that was considered the second era of Wu-Tang. Mm-hmm. So like from 93 to 97, between that, when Liquid Swords came out, Kyle, Only Built. So like when Iron Man came out, that was still part of like that first era. So like, it was still at that time, it still seemed like a Only Built for Cuban Links Part 2, because it was like Ghostface featuring Raekwon. You know, you see, just like when Raekwon had featuring Ghostface, so it was kind of like an extension of that. What made Supreme Clientele so special was that like this was Ghostface coming out part. Like this was, it almost felt like this was the album that Ghostface really wanted to make when he made Iron Man. Like, you know, because you still had the Iron Man interludes and stuff throughout the album and everything. But I think just from an MC standpoint, this flow wise, I think Ghostface stepped that shit up like three notch. Like if you listen to Iron Man, and Iron Man is a good album. Yeah. Don't get it twisted. Yeah. Iron Man is a really good album, but when you when Nutmeg first come on, the way he was white, I was like, when I first heard that, when I first popped that CD in, I was like, I remember I texted my brother like, yo, what the fuck is this shit? Because he had already listened to it before me. So I had finally got it, and I had texted him like, yo, you hear this nigga flowing like this? And the fact that, you know, RZA, a lot of these beats was like, you know, RZA had to pretty much like do this from scratch again, because before, in the process of them making that, RZA, I think one of his studios, it got flooded. So he had to, like, all the beats he had in that, in, you know, ready for this album, he had to redo them again, because he did like a good majority of this album.
Did
as well
he?
As,
I thought he didn't produce most of this.
Oh, no, he did.
He did a lot of it. I mean, but this was the first time. This is another reason why this stands out so much, because usually with Wu-Tang solo, you know, when they was making their solo stuff, it was still like RZA. Maybe Mathematics, maybe True Master, but for this one, you had Juju.
A bunch of other guys.
You had Juju.
There were other guys, yeah.
You had Juju from the Beat Nuts producer. You had Carlos Six, who did work with Diddy and Lotta Dark Man, who was a Wu-Tang Philly at the time. But RZA still handled like...
Because he did like almost half of it, right? Half of this?
A little over half of it. Yeah. I didn't even look at it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did, it doesn't sound like it.
It's a different sound.
I'm saying, it was a whole different sound. Like, it was crazy, man. Like, yeah, this album blew me away like the first... Like, I was hitting everybody up like, yo, this shit is fucking Ghost is on a whole nother level MC-wise. And RZA did some shit that he never done from the first Wu-Tang era production wise on this album, like Stroke of Death. Like that, I was just like, damn.
That was RZA though, was it?
That was RZA? Yeah.
I'm not doubting.
No, you can look.
But that's my favorite jam of the whole shit.
And Stroke of Death.
Yeah, the zoop.
Yeah. I was
like, what the fuck is that?
I was like, holy shit. And then Inspector Deck did a beat on there, Stay True. I was just like, all right, Inspector Deck doing the joint. So yeah, it was. I thought this album, and at the time, even though I remember when I first saw a track list, I was like, damn, 21, but it didn't feel like it.
It's an hour and 8 minutes long.
Yeah.
About two or three of them are skits that were like fucking songs. That were as long as songs, like 2 or 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the interludes.
Right.
Yeah.
And another thing I also noticed, too, about Ghostface as far as, like, I think his content, I think it was a little... more like Afrocentric, a little bit more.
He was
black.
In Africa. He had just came back from Africa.
That's right. He sure was. He was. Yep. He was in Africa. Because if you listen to Iron Man, it was still a little bit more like mafioso, like kind of a build off of the Cuban links. But with this one, he was more of like kind of more conscious, more Afrocentric. He wasn't rapping about like a lot of materialistic stuff. A lot of, you know, like just how he was.
Even the shit with the interlude with Woodrow.
Woodrow.
He was like, nah, man, you know, I love you, man. I love you, man. Dude, like, nah, man, you know, crack stuff. You say cat rule everything around me, crack rules everything around me.
Yeah.
You know, with me, it was like, nah, bro, I love you. I love you, man. I love you too much. I love you too much.
What was the 50 Cent skit thing?
Clyde Smith.
Yeah, the Raekwon shit.
Yeah, because it was a response to him making the How to Ride when 50 made the How to Ride.
Yeah.
So How to Ride was out around that time, so that's why really was at 50.
He
says in the song, he says, this 50 Cent nigga.
50 really set it off
with
How to Ride.
Dude.
Jay-Z responded.
Right.
I know Jay did.
But I'm just highlighting, like, how
I guess I didn't remember. I guess I didn't remember Wu-Tang Clan being a part of this whole thing.
They didn't respond like lyric wise.
Oh, okay.
They were just like, we're going to fuck you up.
Yeah.
Typical Wu. Like, we don't do diss tracks.
Right.
Right. You get popped in the eye when you talk shit about Wu.
Right.
But then with like the choppy flows and like Apollo Kids. Man, it was just
that was the lead single. When I first heard that single,
Man, it was just like, I didn't know it was a single.
Yeah, that was.
I didn't hear any singles.
The biggest song off of this joint.
I don't know what the biggest song is.
Churches La Ghost.
Ladies love that. They didn't know nothing about Supreme Clientele, but they love
that song right there.
Churches La Ghost song. Yeah,
they put that shit on the club.
So that was that was the thing that obviously the sound was different, but you know some of the stuff was accessible to a lot of people, but that single was the one that propelled this album to the top.
Sure. It did.
Because
it
broke
everywhere.
I'll put it to you like this. That song was so big that I didn't know it was Ghostface until years after. Because when I heard it, I heard the tune and at the time, so let me give people a little bit of context. In 2000, I was in 10th grade. So I was going to all the house parties. I was going into 21 and over clubs, sneaking in there when I was living in Miami. So this shit came on.
All I knew was the tune.
The shit was in the fucking clubs of Atlanta. Like, Miami. You go to the clubs of Atlanta. Well, I wasn't in Miami, but.
Yeah, just, I feel you.
But
and it was in Florida.
The shit was up everywhere. Big. So, and that was the thing that kind of blew my mind, because I was working at Warehouse Music at the time in the mall. And everybody used to come in there, hey man, y'all got that? And then they would either sing it or they would say it. And I was like, hilarious. Oh, yeah. And I was like, here you go. Who is that? Oh, and then is the album any good? Yeah, man, you can get the whole thing. Because even back then, I was completely honest. When you came in and you wanted to buy something, because I know they were asking for 20, I was like, nah, that shit garbage. You don't want to buy that. Oh, appreciate it. But for they would 20. Always come in. Yeah, $20. Yeah.
The albums back in the day? In the 2000s, that was
$17.99.
First week was always
cheaper. First week, it was always like $14.99, $16.99, something like that.
If you came back after that, then
after
it was like
$18.99.
Yeah.
So I was like, nah,
I'm not always going to get the first week out.
Yep.
So I guess first week sales always been a thing. They always promoted first week sales.
Yeah.
I never even noticed. I mean, I just bought music. I didn't care about
but they want to get the product call.
But yeah, so that was the interesting thing about this album, because we know who Ghostface was. Like, you're not a mainstream radio guy, but you went mainstream intentionally or unintentionally, I don't know, but it was everywhere.
I'm like, RZA with this damn production. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that Stroke of Death shit, that blew my mind that when I heard that. I was like, oh my God.
How are they rhyming over this so easily? And then, I can see RZA rhyming over it, but right. Ghostface wasn't that type of MC.
Right.
But
and even on Buck 50, just the way they
rhyme. Oh, that's my
that Baby Huey 7, that Buck 50,
man.
The one Red Man.
Oh, little Red Man. Yes, man. Your weed got more seeds than ODB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I was just like, man, that was another production by RZA. I was like, shit. And the way that they was all rhyming on that, when Redman came in, I was like,
shit.
Because at that time, you couldn't tell me shit. I'm like, man, Redman was that dude. Mm-hmm. Back in that time, I'm like, yo, Redman was like one of my favorites. So, but yeah, I think everybody fit on there. I was hoping to get an ODB sighting at that time, because I don't think he was
still
in jail.
Alive?
Mm-hmm. No, he didn't pass away in 2006. Yeah, man, this album. It set the stage, man. It set the stage for Ghostface, and it kind of gave, at that time, Wu-Tang like a new life, because, you know, you got to figure this was GZA had released his third album, Beneath the Surface, that wasn't getting that much praise. Raekwon had dropped his second LP, Immortal Alley, that wasn't getting that much praise. Inspector Deck had dropped his debut solo. It wasn't really getting that much. Yeah, like I'm gonna say, this was post Wu-Tang Forever, so like in that gap. It was like people was releasing their second, you know, solo run. They wasn't really living up to the bill. And then, like, Ghostface came with the Supreme Clientele and just, like, kind of gave life back. And then that's when Wu-Tang came out with the W. And, like, but when Supreme Clientele hit, it just gave new life to Wu-Tang. And it just, Ghostface just started. He started, as a solo artist, he kind of separated himself.
Yep.
He separated himself from all the rest of the art. Like, from Raekwon, even though Raekwon came back and released Only Built for Cuban Links 2 in 2009, but... Like, but at that time, Ghost was that guy. Like, he started a run, a good three album run, because he had Bulletproof Wallets.
Yeah.
And then he had Fish Scale, which that joint you had. Like, he started a run, man. So this album set it off, man. And it inspired, you know, Kanye West. Like, Kanye West admitted that album inspired him. He even sampled Mighty Healthy on Godflow.
Yep.
If y'all remember, if you're listening to Mighty Healthy, take that body.
That was the other song. I was like, okay. I was like, that's when I heard it, I'm like,
man,
I'm
having a good time with
J.O.D. I knew it. Because when I hear it on here, I'm like, man, I know that shit, but why does it sound a little slower than, like, this? I don't remember it.
Kanye West sampled that on
Cruel Summer. I'll be fucking damn.
People have sampled Nutmeg too, right? Or I'm tripping.
I'm sure they have.
Probably. If they sampled it, they did a good job of flipping it the way where I couldn't hear it. But yeah, I mean, this album, you know, inspired Kanye. Kanye said, you know, a lot of his production style was inspired from the way that RZA started changing his producing style on his album. So.
And it almost seems like, I'm just thinking about this now, just listening to you kind of just talk. And thinking about the albums that came afterward, it was like this kind of gave him the blueprint for the rest of his albums, in terms of sound, in terms of style.
Kanye was when he heard this album, when he was, you know, and he started making beats, he was making beats. Some of the beats for Blueprint was intended for Ghostface, but Jay heard him and was like, oh, I gotta have this. I gotta have it. Like, some of them beats, I don't know which ones, but he said when he was in the beat making process for Blueprint, he was some of them BTI already made.
I can hear see girls. I can see Ghostface rapping up. Was,
but yeah, man, this shit, man.
I know.
Critically acclaimed, like, shit.
She like the Blueprint, ain't it, boy? Why is it a classic? I think we all agree that it's a classic.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, is it a classic or why is it a classic?
For me, it's a classic mainly because, first of all, there's no skippable tracks. You know what I'm saying? That's number one. I think that's something that we always kind of talk about. But for me personally, when I originally digested it, it wasn't. But I can see why people put this so far up there. You know, especially when you listen to all of Ghost's projects. You know, this is definitely one of the better ones. But I don't know. Like, you know, like for me, I outside of Church's La Ghost, I don't remember the impact that it had. At that time, I definitely wasn't into Wu-Tang and guys like that. And the people I hung around weren't necessarily into this type of hip hop. So I don't really know the impact that it had. But
this was a good album.
It was, you know, people were saying at that time it was a good album or whatever. But yeah, I would consider it a classic, definitely.
Yeah, I think the perception is that it is a classic. And, you know...
Where do you see this at?
I do see it as a classic. I think one reason is that...
No, I'm just saying the perception. Like, where have you seen it? People saying that it's a Supreme Classic is a classic.
Oh, just online and in hip-hop circle, just seeing people just overall, just in general, talk about this album. When people talk about Ghostface, this album is coming up. It's going to be one of the...
True, if they're talking about Ghostface, but if they're talking about hip-hop, is this one of those albums that is mentioned?
I don't know. I think it could. I think it would.
But I think
it depends on who you're talking to.
It definitely depends. As with anything, but... Of course, but still, though, if you get a collection of hip-hop heads that aren't necessarily just Wu heads... The first 10 to 15 albums they name won't have Supreme clientele in it.
But I don't think that lessens its impact. Or
but okay,
its,
fine.
Its appeal 20, as a classic.
20 to 25. I think
that's a lot of hip-hop albums.
I understand that. But I'm just saying that how strong of a classic is it?
So okay, so in Wu-Tang...
Why you disagree?
I don't think this album comes up.
Yeah.
I would never argue it being a classic or not, but I am 100% with people. I don't hear this album come up.
You might hear Chronic, you might hear Illmatic, you might hear The Ready to Die or whatever.
Right. Yeah, but those.
But again, like me, the room is getting smaller, buddy. The room's getting smaller.
Do you think people will mention only Blue for Cuban Links before this?
Yes. Yeah, they will.
So they might have mentioned DeKalb before this.
Yes.
So they'll mention Liquorsaurus before this.
Hell yeah.
I would even venture to say that Fish Scale might come up before this.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It can go either way.
I guess I'm a man on the island with this one. I have seen people mention this album with high regard and as a classic. When I think about that time in the year 2000. That's why when I look at this, and that's kind of my criteria for some of these discussions that we have. Like, we talk about impact, and that was uncommon for a Wu-Tang project at that time after the end of the 36 Chambers to go beyond like hip-hop heads. It set a precedent, like B mentioned earlier, you know, Kanye took inspiration from that and developed a style from it, was making beats for Jay making beats for Ghostface that Jay took. So I think it had long lasting impact and influence on albums down the line. That's why I think it's a classic.
I've never even thought of using the word classic when I first listened to this album. I just thought it was amazing. Nope. But
yeah.
Classic never always entered my mind, man. Is it a classic to me? Yeah, because I guess at the time when I thought as a big time Wu-Tang fan, I thought Wu-Tang was starting to lose their steam. You know what I'm saying? Like I mentioned earlier in the review that, like, you know, everybody was dropping their second solo projects and it just wasn't right. RZA wasn't producing on them and all that stuff. So, you know, I'm thinking RZA was losing his production edge. And for him to smack me in the face with this album, you know, him and Ghostface, for them to come and make this album like this and to blow me away. Ghost sounding and rhyming completely different from his earlier Wu days. RZA producing completely different from his earlier Wu days. And to still make a great body of work for me to pop in and let it play. And for me to be amazed, that's why it's a classic to me.
I don't know. I've never thought about it until today. I really haven't. It was just a matter of this is a dope-ass Ghostface album. I never really considered whether or not it's a classic. I honestly don't know. I don't know that it really matters that much. We're just talking because really we talk. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That. Yeah.